Pleasant good afternoon to you. It's a half minute before noon. This is Public Radio KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM, live on the web at kmxt.org. Translators in the villages at K269AW Larson Bay, K269AX Karluk, K269AY Akiak, K269AZ Old Harbor, and K220AU in Port Lyons. It's turning into a lovely day, 48 degrees, sun's peeking through the clouds. 71% humidity out at the airport with 10 miles of visibility. We're up at 50 degrees here on Signal Hill. Should be a slight chance of rain after 4 p.m. today, though mostly cloudy skies with a high near 50. South winds 5 to 10 miles an hour, only a 20% chance of rain. Drops down to 10% tonight before 7 p.m., then clouds after that. Low around 41, calm winds. Mostly sunny tomorrow with a high near 54. Calm winds become south about 5 miles an hour. Chiniac Bay, what do we got here? South winds of 10 with a 1-foot sea this afternoon and tonight. Variable less than 10 with 2-foot seas tomorrow. Southwest 10, 3-foot seas in Marmot Bay this afternoon. West winds 10 becoming variable less than 10 with seas of 2 feet tonight. Tomorrow, variable less than 10, seas of 2 feet. Real pleasant. Hope you have a chance to get outside and enjoy the fine weather and get on the water as well. NPR News headlines coming right up.
From NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Staff in the White House's West Wing are now under orders to wear masks while on site unless they're at their own desks. A senior administration official confirms a change to NPR after two White House aides tested positive for coronavirus. Anyone riding Amtrak is also now required to wear a facial covering. NPR's Windsor Johnston has more on that.
Amtrak says passengers are now required to wear facial coverings over their nose and mouth while in stations and on trains, but can remove them when eating in designated areas or seated alone. The rail service says it's already reduced bookings by half to promote social distancing during the coronavirus pandemic. Amtrak says it's seen an overall decline in ridership by more than 90% since the outbreak.
That's NPR's Windsor Johnston. New York's requiring all of its contact tracers to take a new free online training course by the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. We have more from NPR's Hanzi Lo Wong.
The 5-hour course trains new contact tracers before they start making phone calls to people who have tested positive for the new coronavirus. It's part of many state strategies to contain the spread going forward by quickly identifying people who may be infected so that they can be isolated. Emily Gurley is an infectious disease epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins. She says the online training program is designed to help contact tracers overcome possible communication issues.
You're not going to help them isolate and quarantine unless you have some level of trust. And so it's not just what you do as a contact tracer, but how you do it that matters so much.
New York State is trying to hire as many as 17,000 contact tracers. Hanzi Lo Wong, NPR News, New York.
Fans are taking to social media to celebrate the life of veteran actor Jerry Stiller, who has died at the age of 92. His son Ben broke the news today on Twitter that his father passed away from natural causes. Jerry Stiller was popular, especially for sitcom roles as the curmudgeon dad, whose antics and sharp-tongued comebacks always got big laughs. Here's NPR's Eric Deggans.
One of Jerry Stiller's best-known roles was on Seinfeld as George Costanza's dad, Frank, an irritable guy with a ton of catchphrases, including an unusual meditation.
Doctor gave me a relaxation cassette. When my blood pressure gets too high, the man on the tape tells me to say, "Serenity now!"
Are you supposed to yell it?
The man on the tape wasn't specific.
Born Gerald Isaac Stiller in 1927, his big break came in 1953 when he met wife Ann Mira and they formed the comedy team Stiller and Mira, popular on TV shows through the 1960s and 70s. Stiller also played Arthur Spooner, father-in-law to Kevin James' character on the CBS sitcom King of Queens. Both his children are also performers, actress Amy Stiller and actor-director Ben Stiller. Eric Deggans, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News. Official data from Germany show that the coronavirus appears to be picking up speed. NPR's Rob Schmitz reports days ago, Chancellor Angela Merkel announced the country could gradually return to normal.
Last Wednesday, when Chancellor Merkel announced that shops, restaurants, and schools could gradually reopen, the virus reproduction rate stood at 0.65. That number has since climbed to 1.1, meaning 10 people with coronavirus infect on average 11 others, according to the Robert Koch Institute, the country's disease control agency. The institute has warned that for the infection rate to be deemed under control and slowing down, it needs to stay below 1.0. The latest data raised alarm after the country had reopened most shops, playgrounds, schools, as well as restaurants, gyms, and places of worship. German authorities say they'll reimpose social curbs if the rate rises above 50 cases per 100,000 residents in a week. Rob Schmitz, NPR News, Berlin.
More children are back in school in the Netherlands, and more businesses have reopened in France. Further indication in Europe of the gradual attempt to get back to some level of normalcy, all while coronavirus infection remains a real threat, even in a climate of physical distancing and face coverings in public. South Korea was planning to start opening schools this week, but that's now halted after a cluster of new cases was confirmed. The government is also reimposing restrictions on bars and nightclubs that typically attract crowds into confined spaces. The Dow closed down more than 100 points, or nearly half a percent, to end the day at 24,221. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the George Gund Foundation, working to make Cleveland and Northeast Ohio more globally competitive, livable, sustainable, and just. More information available at gundfoundation.org and Americans for the Arts.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
And by Artinger's Fine Furnishings, proud to offer a variety of sofas and love seats made in Oregon by Stanton, as well as massage and zero-gravity chairs by Human Touch. Find the fabric and style that fits your lifestyle in the store or by special order. Also featuring inviting rugs, lamps, and accessories for your home at Artinger's, 486-5554.
After nearly 2 months of distance learning, Kodiak educators say teachers have found their groove in their efforts to continue classes virtually. Terry Schneider, principal at St. Mary's Catholic School, said it's required flexibility and constant communication.
Flexibility has been the name of the game. You know, when something works, you go with it and figure out how to use more of it. And if it's not working, then you regroup and rework. And boy, that's been what our teachers have stepped up to the plate to do and are dedicated in making it work for their kids.
St. Mary's has 61 students across preschool and kindergarten up through eighth grade. Schneider said being a rural school district, some of the teaching methods were familiar.
Distance delivery is not new to all of us. I started teaching Aleutic language by distance when video teleconferencing was first started. So, you know, and our rural kids around the island have been fabulous students in that regard. And teachers just have to figure it out and make it work.
According to their principals, students at St. Mary's and at Kodiak Christian School were already using an online platform called Google Classroom to share assignments and turn in work. Kat Baccaro, principal at Kodiak Christian School, said younger children weren't as used to the virtual learning format. She said teachers have worked to provide recorded lessons along with hands-on activities to keep them engaged.
The families can help the kids log on, view the lesson, and then do whatever assessment goes with that, whether it be a worksheet or an activity. Some of the teachers have dropped off supplies like chalk and coloring paper, and that way they can continue to work and it not be such a tedious task too.
Both school principals say that a loss of fundraising, due in part to the pandemic's hit to local donors, has been difficult. Picaro said that while they were able to receive assistance through the Federal Small Business Administration, there is still a lot of uncertainty during this time. She said she hopes the community will pull together as restrictions begin to ease up. St. Mary's, which is associated with the Catholic Church through the Archdiocese of Anchorage, is looking towards state and federal aid through the church, but Schneider expects it to take some time for that money to show up. Alaska's summer commercial salmon season kicks off this week on Thursday with the opening of the Copper River District. Copper River salmon are prized fish beloved by many, especially high-end restaurants on the West Coast, but restaurants may not be reliable buyers this year as owners grapple with reduced business amid the coronavirus pandemic. Alaska Public Media's Abby Collins has more.
Lark is a fancy restaurant in Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood. A virtual tour of the business shows tables topped with white cloth and wine glasses, tall ceilings, and trendy hanging light fixtures. Like so many others in the restaurant industry, Lark's owner and chef, John Sundstrom, has made big changes to adapt to dining room closures aimed at slowing the spread of coronavirus. The fine dining restaurant has shifted to takeout. Normally, Sundstrom says this time of year, he'd be getting excited for Alaska's Copper River salmon fishery to open.
Seattle is known for seafood, but what people don't realize is much of that probably comes from Alaska.
Each year, Alaska Airlines marks the occasion with a big event at Seattle's airport. It includes a cooking competition, which Sundstrom won once. But this year, Sundstrom says the chances of him buying Copper River salmon are pretty low.
We don't have anywhere to sell it. You know, I mean, I could potentially bring it in for one of our menus, but it's also kind of a pretty big risk for me because, you know, again, Copper River tends to be about double the wholesale price to restaurants.
For some perspective, Lark's three-course to-go meals cost $49 a person. A plate of Copper River salmon would typically sell for around $60.
I'd have to be, you know, charging them, you know, more like $80 or $90 for a takeout meal per person. And that's hard for me to know if people will do it in this climate.
Sundstrom says he's taking it week by week and not ruling Copper River salmon out completely. Long-term decisions are hard to make right now as uncertainty dominates the season.
I mean, that is... That's the story for the Alaska seafood industry and the seafood industry, like in normal times, uncertainty.
That's Garrett Everidge, an economist at the McDowell Group who focuses on fish. He says that normal uncertainty has greatly increased because of the pandemic, and he's hesitant to make any definitive predictions about what the market for Alaska seafood will look like this summer. But there are a few things we know right now.
For that seafood that is flowing into the food service market, restaurants, cafeterias, schools, that market is struggling.
At the same time, more people are cooking at home and stocking up on food at grocery stores. Everidge says retail sales have been strong.
You know, in March when everybody was buying toilet paper, they were also buying any seafood and any protein they could get a hold of.
The fresh fish market for fish that might go to a high-end restaurant like Lark is particularly vulnerable right now. Early in the season, Everidge says Copper River salmon falls into that category. He says halibut prices are low right now too, but Everidge says it's hard to predict what salmon prices will look like this summer. Fresh fish makes up just a small portion of the market for Alaska seafood, but it's still an important component of business for fishermen like Mike Weber of Cordova-based Weber Wild Seafood. Weber has been involved in commercial fishing for more than 50 years. Right now, he gillnets on the Copper River and around Prince William Sound and markets the fish himself. Weber says he is worried about sales this year.
We are attempting to reach out to more individuals this year. The restaurants have been a great stable market for us where they're ordering fish once to twice a week from us.
Weber says the boat harbor is a little different in Cordova this year. As fishermen prepare their boats, they're mostly keeping to themselves. Masks are standard. Weber says he's going all out on sanitation, and he runs a really small operation. Only two people touch the fish, Weber and his daughter.
We are preparing ourselves for the furthest step of sanitation, sanitizing ourselves as well as our fish.
Everidge at the McDowell Group says amid all the uncertainty, this first big salmon fishery could provide some insight into what the market for Alaska seafood might look like this summer.
Copper River will be one piece of the puzzle, but I anticipate the entire season we will be looking for new information and there will be ups and downs.
Meanwhile, there won't be any major fanfare when the first Copper River salmon arrives in Seattle this year. Alaska Airlines spokesman Tim Thompson says there may be a photo opportunity, but no cooking competition and no big event. In Anchorage, I'm Abby Collins.
University of Alaska has received over $10 million in federal CARES Act coronavirus response funds. Most recent tranche is $7.9 million, and UA spokesperson Robbie Graham said more than half of that has gone to students. Graham said the amount of money a student received was based on their most recent free application for federal student aid, or FAFSA, application.
And it went directly into their student accounts at each university. So the money that was set aside for student relief in the neighborhood of $3.9 million has already been dispersed to students directly.
Graham said the money has been used to reimburse about 4,500 students for travel and other pandemic-related costs triggered by the abrupt closure of the campuses and transition to remote course delivery in March. Meanwhile, she says other federal COVID response funds are being used to help each campus cover refunded room and board and other costs.
If the university purchased equipment, software, if they paid for online licensing fees, or any kind of internet service, any expenditure like that, the universities can use that institutional fund to reimburse themselves.
Graham emphasizes that those costs, along with lost revenue from declining enrollment and canceled events, as well as the stock market downturn and other pandemic-driven impacts, far exceed federal relief.
Right now, we're estimating that lost revenue expense is in the neighborhood of $35 to $38 million over the next two fiscal years.
Graham said the losses are on top of a three-year $70 million reduction in state support. The mayor of Nome has passed away. The city of Nome confirmed in a Facebook post this morning that Richard Benneville, aged 75, died overnight from pneumonia at Norton Sound Regional Hospital. Benneville was elected in 2015 and was in the middle of serving his third term as mayor. He was also president of the Alaska Conference on Mayors. In a Facebook post, Benneville was remembered for his, quote, colorful personality, passion for the community, and love of arts, end quote. Fairbanks recorded a high temperature of 82 degrees yesterday. The official reading at the airport was just 2 degrees shy of the daily record of 84 set May 10, 1995. The near-record heat combined with low relative humidity, winds, and dead grasses and vegetation are making for dangerous wildfire conditions. It's also rapidly melting off this past season's above-normal snowpack from higher elevations, and that's swelling rivers across the region. Flood watches are in effect for some central and eastern interior rivers, where in some cases high water is causing flooding in low-lying areas and preventing boats from getting under bridges. High water on the Dietrich River has closed the Dalton Highway at mile 206. National Weather Service declared green up yesterday in Fairbanks. The subjective determination is based on observation of tree buds opening on the Chena Ridge as viewed from National Weather Service headquarters on the University of Alaska Fairbanks West Ridge. Green up day. Let's find out what's happening from Alaska Fish Radio.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Seaweed can help save the world from cow farts. More after this.
It's not too late to order a new RSW system for this year. IMS has stock units ready throughout Alaska. Visit imspacific.com.
They are coming to take our cows away, claim critics of the proposed Green New Deal that's cropped up in Congress. The deal calls for major investments in clean energy jobs and infrastructure to help transform to a more earth-friendly economy. It's making some farmers uneasy because fingers are pointing at cows as big polluters from all the methane gas they pass. Most of the gas is actually belched from the cow's mouth and not released from the back end. Cow burps account for 26% of the nation's total methane emissions, according to the EPA. Seaweed can help put the brakes on all those burps. Researchers in Australia started investigating after a dairy farmer in Canada noticed cows that grazed on washed-up seaweed along the shore were healthier and more productive than those in the field. A study 5 years ago by Canadian researchers confirmed those results, and they tested 20 different kinds of seaweed in cow feeds. Overall, it reduced methane production by up to 50%, but required high doses of seaweed, almost 20% by sample weight. Enter Asparagopsis, a red seaweed found throughout the Pacific. The Queensland researchers found that adding less than 2% to a cow's diet reduced its methane output by up to 99%. The cows have good taste. Asparagopsis is one of the most popular seaweed ingredients in Hawaiian cuisine and is used traditionally in poke. The problem now is producing enough of it. The researchers said wild harvesting of the red seaweed is not sustainable, and it will take financial and industry backers to cultivate the methane-suppressing seaweed on an industrial scale. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Sorry, we're gabbing here. It's a beautiful 48 degrees out at the airport with 71% humidity and northeast wind at 6 miles an hour blowing, 10 miles of visibility. Today there's a slight chance of rain after 4 p.m., mostly just cloudy skies with a high near 50, south winds 5 to 10, 20% chance of rain, 10% chance of rain before 7 tonight with cloudy skies, low around 41, calm winds. Tomorrow the sun's going to come out, a high near 54, calm winds become south, only about 5 miles an hour. What do we got here? It's the 11th of May. Sun up was, man, it was at 5:54 this morning, and it doesn't go down to 10:20 tonight. Another long day, 16 hours and 27 minutes of daylight today. 4 minutes and 16 seconds of daylight gain. Our record high got up to 72, nowhere near the 82 in Fairbanks, but 72 here is pretty hot, huh? 1968 was when that happened. 29, the record low in 2001, and we're at 48 right now. The synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters issued at 3:30 this morning. High pressure persists over the Gulf through late Tuesday night. Yay. Barren Islands, west of the Barrens, including Kamishak Bay this afternoon, southeast 25-foot seas, southeast 15 5-foot seas tonight, variable 10 3-foot seas tomorrow. Barren Islands east, south 15 5-foot seas this afternoon, south 15 4-foot seas tonight, west 25-foot seas tomorrow. Marmon Island to Sitkanak, south 15 4-foot seas this afternoon and tonight, variable 10 3-foot seas on Tuesday. Chiniac Bay this afternoon, south 10 with a 1-foot sea, same for tonight, variable less than 10 with a 2-foot sea tomorrow. Marmot Bay this afternoon, southwest 10, 3-foot seas, west 10 in the evening becoming variable less than 10 with 2-foot seas tonight, variable less than 10 with seas of 2 feet tomorrow. Shelikof Strait this afternoon, southwest winds at 20 with 7-foot seas, southwest 15, 5-foot seas tonight, south 15, 4-foot seas on Tuesday. In the Kodiak District, we're in the midst of a low tide right now. It happened about half an hour ago. A nice little, nice big minus 1 footer. The high tide's at 6:30 tonight, 6 3/4 of a feet, of a foot, and the evening low tide's 11:30, 2.84 feet. Uganic tide, where low tide is right now minus 1.75 feet. High tide 6:41 p.m. is about 13.5 feet, and the evening low tide is about 12:30 in the morning, 3.3 feet. Some announcements. Kodiak Public Library offers curbside service to deliver books and DVDs. Place items on hold through the library's website or call the library to request items you'd like to borrow. Every Wednesday at 10:30, the library will be offering a video children's story time at the library's Facebook page. This week, Miss Annie will read Whale Stories. We're in this together. The library's bingo game can be found on their website and Facebook page. Snap and share photos of activities on any completed row by May 31st to enter a drawing for a care package. Share photos on Facebook or email them to Lori, lmadsen@city.kodiak.ak.us. We're all in this together. Bingo. Tomorrow, teen book taster at 10:30. And Miss Annie will be reading three books on the library's Facebook page at 10:30 and on their YouTube channel. This month she'll be talking about three powerful graphic novels for teens. On Friday, Zoom Room Book Club at 3 o'clock. Meet up online to discuss what you've read, watched, or listened to recently from print to podcast. Send an email to Lori, lori.lmadsen@city.kodiak.ak.us, to receive an invitation to the Zoom Room Book Club. And on Saturday, the library is going to be hosting another garden party at 11 o'clock. Come help dig, weed, plant, and prepare for garden this summer. Staggered arrivals are appreciated to maintain 6-foot distancing. For more information about their programs, go to their Facebook page or call 486-8686. City Council will be holding a work session tomorrow night at 7:30. Elected officials will be participating via audio video conferencing, and a few people will be there in person. People from the public are encouraged to tune in to KMXT for broadcast of the work session. For everyone's protection, there'll be no in-person attendance for this work session in compliance with the CDC rules. Regular meeting agendas and packets are available online at city.kodiak.ak.us/meetings. They encourage members of the public to email comments to clerk@city.kodiak.ak.us or call during the work session, 486-7599. If you want more information now, call the city clerk, 486-8636. Kodiak History Museum misses sharing and creating stories with families at the museum. Please join them for a Zoom Story Hour. Meet up with them to read May the Stars Drip Down by Jeremy Chatterlane and illustrated by Nikki McClure. For the Zoom meeting link and security password, email education@kodiakhistorymuseum.org. That is going to be on the 16th from 11 to 11:30. There is also a weekly community sit on Zoom on the 13th, which is Wednesday at 7 o'clock. You're invited to join Monica Claridge for weekly community sits via Zoom. These sessions are in support of the museum's current temporary exhibit, Hold, an introduction to mindfulness, and they'll begin with a short discussion about mindfulness and conclude with a guided mindfulness of breath exercises. No experience necessary. Everyone is welcome. It's a great opportunity to pay attention to the moment, share some time with our community while keeping each other safe. Find the Zoom link on the Kodiak History Museum Facebook page events page. The Alaska COVID-19 Response Fund Rapid Response Grant is now accepting applications through May the 20th. In partnership with the Rasmussen Foundation, the United Way of Alaska, the Alaska Community Foundation's goal for Alaska Can-Do COVID-19 Response Grant opportunity is to support nonprofit organizations who have been financially impacted by the novel coronavirus and resulting COVID-19 pandemic, especially those who have funding gaps that remain as a result of low or no funding awarded through the CARES Act and other foundation funding sources. They invite all to submit a proposal to meet this goal. There are grants from $5,000 to $20,000 that are going to be awarded. You have until the 20th to go online and submit an application. Go to your application. Go through the Alaska Community Foundation's grant site at grantinterface.com/home/logon. If you have any questions about their program, call Katie St. John at the Alaska Community Foundation. You can call us as well if you need that information on how to get in contact with them. Kodiak Audubon celebrates World Migratory Bird Day on the 16th. They're having a via Zoom meeting from Kodiak to Indonesia, the migration of Alutiiq terns, 9 o'clock to 9:45 on Saturday, I think that is. Presentation by Jill from the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge in Oregon State University. Join them virtually from the comfort of your home with a cup of coffee while she shares the work she's been doing here in Kodiak that fits in nicely with the 2020 migratory conservation theme. Birds connect our world. Contact KodiakAudubon@gmail.com for a direct link. And there's a bird and birding challenge from 10 o'clock until 12 o'clock. You'll hear more about that as well.